Let's go! Come on everybody, and let's get to bumping, cause it's trailblazer time. Baby Rip City's jumping now.
Okay, Brindle up the middle. Hit!
Come on everybody. All right, everybody. Welcome to the 374th edition of the Holy Backboard Podcast. I am Dustin here in Rip City, and I got my man
Sage here talking about the Portland Trailblazers. It has been I honestly don't even remember the week that was for the Portland Trailblazers. I just remember losses and, you know, watching players that probably shouldn't be in the league playing. And, you know, shout out to them. They get to achieve a goal that is super, super rare. But, you know, it's tough watching these games. Of course, I do it. But, you know, watching bad basketball is tough.
Yeah, let's do a quick recap. It was actually more wins than losses this week. Three games on the docket, a back-to-back in Memphis. Portland wins 122-92 on Friday. Come back from 17 in the fourth quarter to defeat the Memphis Grizzlies in overtime by 7, 107-100, and then fall to the Minnesota Timberwolves, 119-114. They are still firmly entrenched into that fifth position in the draft lottery at 17-43. The Memphis Grizzlies have won four more games than them, and they are still two wins ahead of the Charlotte Hornets. It wouldn't surprise me, Sage, if the Blazers just end up staying at five. I think there is an outside chance Memphis does pass them in the standings, but what I've been watching is Toronto and Brooklyn and seeing if they get enough wins, because my projections are the Blazers maybe we have six or seven wins left in them this year, given the schedule, given the ins and outs of the players coming on and off the injury report. And so if you can just get to 25 wins for the Raptors and Nets, that would at least keep Portland at six. And as I have been thinking, this draft is like a 4 to 6 player draft for me. And so you really don't want to slide further than six in the lottery, which normally I would have been like a really grumpy Gus after the Blazers pulled out that game in Memphis. Like, I fully expected them to split just because of how banged up the Grizzlies were. But this isn't necessarily that draft to get that worked up over for. There's no Victor Wembanyama. There's no Zion Williamson. There's no Shaquille O'Neal, Tim Duncan player that you're pining for to really move up to the top of the lottery. Like, I genuinely think that the best player from the 2024 class could come at pick five, could come at pick 13. It's just going to be one of those years, and you're going to have to kind of scout your ass off to find that player. Clearly you want to give yourself the first pick, and that's comes with a lot of luck, but also a lot of pressure. So sometimes the best decision has been one that's been made for you, right? Like the Blazers in 2006, a lot of players got taken before Brandon Roy, and they were able to make a little draft day deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they got P. Roy. Like in 2007, it didn't work out so well, right? It worked out much better for Seattle. The decision was made for them. Durant fell right into their laps, and the rest was history. So it's not black and white. There is a lot of gray to the NBA draft. So it's not really worth getting worked up over. But for the Portland Trailblazers right now, it is definitely an evaluation period. DeAndre Ayton missed all three games. Scoot Henderson is still currently out with an abductor, and it's pretty frustrating at the lack of updates that we have. We're going on week three. Like, Friday would be 3 weeks since he's played basketball. Obviously, that was the Rising Stars game, and we didn't really see where the injury took place. So it's tough watching this team right now. Jeremy Grant got injured as well. Doesn't seem like it's a serious injury. He is questionable tonight against Oklahoma City. Tamani Kamara's illness. There's just a lot of things that are happening. And I think my biggest takeaway watching the Memphis games, it just has to be, there's just not a lot of, like, I don't feel connected to this current group of players. And whether it's the Blazers and Root Sports making it incredibly difficult to watch live streams of this game, of this team, or the fact that there's probably been over 20 to 25 Blazers that have suited up in uniform this year. It's almost like I'm watching college football in the transfer portal era, when half the team gets cycled through on a year-to-year basis, and you're already used to it as a college sports fan because there's limited amount of eligibility, and clearly with the portal, you've accepted that that change is going to happen. You don't really expect that type of turnover in season to happen at the NBA level, and this is really year three that we're experiencing that, and it's hard to feel connected to players that you know are not going to be on the roster next year or going to make an impact. So no disrespect to the Moses Browns or Ashton Hagens of the world, but you're not going to play a long-term role on this franchise. You probably won't be on the roster next year. I mean, it just feels like we keep cycling through these players. Like, I get alerts all the time from Woj and Shams, and I'm like, oh, Ish Wainwright's back in the league. Like, did we have him this year? Did we have him last year? Oh, yeah, we had him earlier this year.
You should remember Ish Wainwright. He took like five shots in 3 minutes.
And then there was the point guard, I think his name started with a J, but his last name was like Bouye.
Yeah, Bouye.
And I was like, again, I was like, did he play for us last year? Or was it was this year. And it was like, it's so hard to feel connected to this team, to care right now. And this is a diehard fan of, you know, 35, 34 years going on. And last year was made bearable by Shaden, because you saw Shaden and you're like, this is our lottery pick. We're watching him develop, going to be a future piece of the puzzle. Unfortunately, he's been dinged up for the second half of the season. And your current lottery pick has just been in and out of the lineup with minor nicks and bruises that, you know, they're taking precautions with Scoot Henderson. And so right now, the player that I'm like trying to get excited about is Rayan Rupaire, because he's got that upside. And Tumani Kamara is showing me more. That's another player that, you know, tune in to see what he's giving you. But a lot of the times you're just watching a bunch of role players out there. And that's no disrespect to Jabari Walker, who had a monster performance on Friday and kind of saved the day on Saturday with, you know, a putback and then a putback and foul to send the game into overtime. But Jabari's even said it himself. Jabari Walker is a role player. Chris Murray, it does a lot of things right, but I am highly concerned about the shot and his ability to attack closeouts. And then you're just kind of just going through the motions, watching veterans like Matisse Thybul, even Anfernee Simons. Like, it's tough. That's my overall theme for the week. It's a tough situation for Blazer fans. Like, we just started March, and I can't believe we have 22 more of these games. Like, I have a game on Friday. Like, I really want to go, but like, I really hope Scoot Henderson plays. Otherwise, like, I don't know what the reason is to go. And that sounds really horrible to say, but
no, I feel you. I absolutely feel you. The thing that for me was the most impressive thing was the game against Minnesota. I don't even remember the date, but what?
Monday.
So I thought that Dwop Wreath was the perfect kryptonite to Rudy Gobert. And that's the reason that we were in the game. You put the defensive player of the year, most likely, or one of the guys on that short list, and you have to have him go out to defend Dwop Wreath. I think that was the reason that we were so close, is, you know, he wants to be in drop coverage desperately, but Dwop Wreath was hitting threes and making him have to run out. And that gives driving lanes to the Ashton Hagens and all the other guys that need 2 feet in the paint to be effective. Dwop Wreath changed the game for the Portland Trailblazers against Rudy Gobert. We can talk points, about his deep.
What's 26 that? Points, 10 of 14 shooting, 5 of 6 from downtown. So not only did he put up a big number, he did it incredibly efficient.
Yeah. That changed the game. Like, we can talk about like how the Blazers played, but that was the main reason we were in that game, was because Dwop Wreath was an efficient stretch big that allowed us to have a much better spacing team. Dwop Wreath as an offensive player is really, really effective for the Portland Trailblazers because of how many guys we have that aren't shooters. So to have the guy that the center, bringing the opposing center out to defend him, is huge. In the NBA, 1 through 4 is essentially switchable. You're not guarding the guy that on the program is the same position as you, but at center, you do. It is much more 1v1 matchups. And to get Rudy Gobert out there was a huge dub for everything the Blazers were trying to do. Dwop Reef, there's a lot of things I don't like, but the fact that he can stretch the floor is the best part of him, positive, negative. That is the thing that's keeping him in the league right now. So shout out to Dwop Reef for making the best defense in the NBA look like an average defense.
Yeah, and even if he's not a full-time backup center, I think he's enough of a change of pace.
Yeah.
That where if the Blazers were in the playoff hunt as the eighth seed and you're looking at playing the Minnesota Timberwolves, he's the exact player that you want. He's the type of player you want to go up against a Victor Wembanyama. Like, you need to bring the best interior defender out and dance with you on the perimeter. And that's his specialty. And he's on a really team-friendly contract. He's been, knock on wood, very durable so far. And I agree. Like, he's defensively, more so rebounding the ball. You wish there was a little bit more there, but hey.
I remember him not getting a rebound for the first, like, 20 minutes that he played that game.
Yeah, he ended up with three boards. That's why I didn't mention it. I just mentioned the scoring, because that's what he did well, and that's what we're trying to...
Do you think he tries really hard, but I don't think he's an NBA-quality defender or an NBA-quality rebounder. He's just there to stretch the floor. And you know, in playoff time, like, remember when Myers Leonard was thrust into big minutes in the playoffs?
Against the Warriors.
There's going to be a game, if we're there and he's on that team, he's going to have to play 15 minutes because, you know, DA twisted an ankle or whoever else is there hurt themselves or foul trouble. He's going to have to be there. And if he's ready to just launch threes and be a competent and confident scorer, he's worth it. He's so cheap that we can't really even get rid of him, even if we wanted to. He's on this team for however long that contract is.
Yep. Yeah, I thought he played. He had a really tough shooting night, specifically Friday in Memphis. But they were giving him open looks, and those are looks you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. with him shooting. And yeah, you need him, because like I said, in the playoffs, it's all about matchups and what you have and what they don't have. And it's hard to find players that of that size that can bring mm-hmm. most likely the opposition's best interior defender out with them. It also really sets up for an effective pick and roll, mm-hmm. because you're rolling to the basket or you're picking and popping. And there's just a lot of things that he can do there. So yeah, shout out to Dwop. He's been one of the fun, better storylines of the season, and a player that I hope is around long-term after signing that guaranteed NBA contract.
How many years was it?
Three.
I mean, like, we can't even trade him if we wanted to, bro. Like, it's such little money that it's going to be hard to send matching salaries. So, like, I think Dwop Reef's on the team as long as he's, like, contractually obligated to be there. And that's awesome. That's, like, that's generational wealth for his family. It's all of these good things. And as long as he has the confidence to come in when called on and be that utility player for the Blazers, if he can hit a single in a clutch time, he earned his salary.
I also want to give a shout out to my guy, Ryan Rupaire. 13 points, 5 of 7 shooting, perfect 3 of 3 from downtown, 6 boards, and just
out-rebounded our center.
In just 23 minutes of action, like, he is moving so much better with the basketball in his hands than he did in summer league. Like, it's night and day, and there's still so much more room for him to grow. But, like, we drafted him, like, off of the film. Like, you look at the arms, you looked at the defensive point of attack, the potential, and something that we haven't had as a disruptor in such a long time. And he's out here, like, step backs over Karl Anthony Towns. He's, you know, euroing through the middle. Like, that's what kind of keeps me going as a player fan right now. It's like, this guy could be the small forward of the future. Like, you definitely need to invest in him and give him more playing time. But, like, these are the flashes that I'm like, okay, I can envision 2-3 years down the line, we're doing this in a regular season game, consistently getting
games
rotation
that matter. Minutes.
What's that?
Games that matter. In games that matter. Yeah. He's doing it.
And speaking of games that matter, I had a question for you while I was watching the Memphis games, because no disrespect to the players out there, and I know I have to keep saying this, really grinding and trying to make a living, but like those were glorified pickup games. If I'm being perfectly honest, like the caliber of talent that was out there, like there were players on Memphis, I'm like, I have never heard of you. Did you come from 2K? Didn't even hear of you in the draft process. Mm-hmm. Clearly Portland's bringing in a few of those players. And especially in the Friday game, there was some really shoddy passing on both ends of the floor. But speaking of games that don't matter, how do you differentiate a player going off in quote unquote games that don't matter and knowing whether that's going to translate or not? Because we saw it with Anfernee Simons in 2022. When Dame went out, we saw Skylar Mays last year have a career night at Memphis, and it turned into, you know, a backup contract with Portland. And then he just wasn't able to really replicate any of that this season. We've seen some flashes from Delano Banton. How do you decipher what's going to stick and what's just kind of a product of the system, and the fact that somebody has to play these 40.
Somebody has to score these points.
Somebody has to take these shots. Like what do you look at that says, okay, this is translatable versus this is just here to fill up the stat sheet?
I guess I can't tell you, like, I have some scientific process. It's just a gut instinct. Like, you and I have watched basketball every day for 26 years, however long that you and I have watched basketball. I remember watching basketball with my older brother, watching Charles Barkley, like in 95. So like my first good memories are of watching basketball with my family. So it's kind of like I put in the 10,000 hours of watching. So I kind of just have that gut feeling that Delano Banton, as hard of a worker as he is, as good of a rebounder as he is for his position, the fact that he can pass, he's taking that opportunity, the 100 possessions per game that happened in a game, and he's taking them and using them. I don't think that lasts. I think Anfernee Simons, because he's just a better prospect, you saw the sustainability. With Delano, with Ashton Hagans, with all of these players, it's just like he's just taking the opportunity that's presented, the possessions that happen in every game. He's the one that's using them in a shot or a layup. I don't think Ashton Hagans is going to be an NBA player next year. I think Delano Banton is a really nice story. I really don't believe the hype. I think Ryan Rupert needs that offseason to get stronger. Like, he desperately needs to get stronger. He's moving better, but he needs to get stronger if he's going to be aggressive point of attack. He just needs, like, I don't think that you can get that physically stronger when you're playing, you know, four games a week. You're not going to have time to hit the weight room and, you know, get your core right. I believe in Ryan Rupert. I do not believe in Delano. I don't believe in Ashton Hagans. Who else is taking a lot of usage rate away from the team? Or are those the main two?
It was just more of a question that I had. Like, when I think there are a lot of factors for me. Like, when I was watching Shaedon Sharpe last year, it was taking it into context. This player took an entire year off. This player did not play college basketball. This player is 19 years old and finishing over Rudy Gobert in the clutch, doing moves that I deem he can replicate on a consistent basis. Rupert, this is really his first NBA action that he's getting, another 19-year-old coming over from New Zealand Breakers. Now, if Rupert is doing this in year three, the chances are of him hitting significantly lower. Like, these flashes need to come in year one. And then
every player that we're going to talk about today, there's context that is specific to them. Like, Delano Banton needs to be in the paint. Would you rather have Scoot Henderson be in the paint to do his thing, or would you rather have Delano Banton? Oh, okay, you'd rather have Scoot Henderson. Okay. So that's not, like, he's going to be in the G League or overseas playing ball and playing the way that he can do it successfully. Like, he has the opportunity. You know, Jimmer Fredette looked like a MVP at BYU. he tried to play the exact same way without scaling down or anything like that. And that's the reason why he's in China. So there's so much context to how these players are performing, but pure gut check, they're going to be searching for the guys that are ball dominant right now are going to be searching for jobs in the near future.
I mean, you talk about context, and usually it doesn't happen for third-year players, but it is happening for Trey Mann. The context was he was just behind better players, significantly better players in Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and, you know, Jalen Williams and Lu Dort and that crew over at OKC. There's just no playing time for him on the Western Conference leading Thunder. For Delano Banton, this is now his third NBA team. Bounced from the Raptors to the Celtics, now to the Trailblazers. The Celtics are kind of like the Thunder in that they're the best team in the league, and that there was just no playing time for him.
But what even when they were in, like, even when the Celtics were injured, like Drew, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Kristaps, and Jaylen were out, he didn't get minutes. Like, there have been games where they just rest starters, and me being the good DFS boy, I realized it. And Banton didn't get playing time when the five stars were out. So, like, obviously the Celtics thought Peyton Pritchard and Sam Morrell were more valuable than Delano Banton. But like,
he does a lot of things well. Like, he's, I like to think of him as an idea, right? Like, a 6'8". Ball handler is a fantastic idea. Like, if you're starting from, you know, 2K in the build, like, that is a really tough player to stop. It's like when I worked at an agency and you're creating ideas to pitch to your clients. You have to have an idea that people get excited about, but an idea alone is just that. It needs refinement. It needs backing with budget. It needs to be, you know, you need to have people from other teams come in and help flush it out. You need to be able to sell that idea to get somebody else excited about it. And with Delano, there are plays where he takes the ball and goes coast to coast and finishes with two hands. He hits an open three and you're like, okay. But there are other plays where he gets tunnel vision. He dribbles into traffic. The handle isn't nearly as tight as you need it to be a ball handler, especially at 6'8", when that ball is coming up higher than it is for a 6'4", 6'3" guard. There's just too many times where I'm like, you're not going to be successful in real regular season basketball, let alone playoff basketball, with Delano being your main ball handler. Now,
and just think about him off ball. Do you really have to guard him? Do you really have to guard him?
No, you don't. And now, so, I would say he has shown me enough that if you're going to bring Malcolm back and you're going to go scoot Malcolm at your point guards, I'd be totally fine with Delano getting the Skylar Mays role. I think I would roll the dice on that. Like, he's shown me enough that I would say, okay, third point guard, fine.
Yeah, sure.
But outside of,
we're like, talking about the 15th man. I'm exactly cool with it.
That's kind of what we're having to get excited about as Blazer fans right now. And it's really difficult. Before we maybe move on and look ahead, how did you feel Anfernee Simons played this week? I know recency bias says 34-14 on 50% shooting from the field against the Timberwolves. But when I watched both Memphis games, I was kind of shocked by the body language. He, to me, looked like a player that felt like he was too good to be playing in these glorified pickup games. Like, he should be the player sitting out like Jaren Jackson Jr. Like, oh, I need to be resting right now. Like, I'm too good to be in these scenarios. Like, I'm just kind of seeing the same situations where going up really, really weak, getting a lot of his passes tipped, physical deep. Vince Williams was in his just chest for a lot of those contests. And when he did get hot, it was the same story. It was one-on-one, like very little ball
difficult
movement.
Shots get being difficult pulled up.
Shots. And yeah, they went in and he was part of that comeback on Saturday. But again, that's not winning basketball for me. I know he had that awesome jam over Rudy Gobert, and that's what I want to see more of. He also had a dunk to end the half Friday, a two-hand slam against the Grizzlies. But when I can recall certain plays, it means you're not doing it enough.
It's not a pattern of success. Like, if you're trying to learn basketball better just for you, or, you know, you want to create content, look at what a player does, and if you see something interesting, track it. And if it becomes consistent, that's something that that player feels very comfortable with and does at a high level. You're talking about individual plays that are so memorable that he just does it twice in a game, and it's not a consistent thing. What's a more consistent thing that Anthony Simons does is left-right dribble, left-right dribble, shoot. Now, his pull-up game is top-notch, but admittedly, it's a very hard shot to get consistent at. So you see those explosive games, and then you see games where he's getting like the defense is up his ass. Like Vince Williams, like we didn't talk about Vince Williams last year. So we're like, he definitely deserves the role that he has now, but I don't know. He has this. Eventually, it has to stop being a learning experience dealing with physical defense and learning how to actually attack it. I want to say this year is kind of bunk, but how many more years can I say this year doesn't matter because of the context of the team sucking? How long do I have to think this before I think he is a B player that I want so desperately to be an A? When am I going to realize this is who he is? He's like 25 years old. There isn't going to be that much more internal development. This is the dude that we are looking at who, whether it's the coaching staff, the marketing people, all of these yes men in his community saying he's awesome, he's a future all-star. When is he going to realize that I have to learn how to play off ball in this league? So I'm getting kind of tired of excusing shitty process just because he's talented. Yeah, I'm willing to do it for this episode. Year, but if we get a real coach next year and he's still doing the same shit, it's kind of time to pull the plug, trade him to another tanking team, and let him put up amazing empty calorie stats.
Yeah, you mentioned last episode about how the defense was so bad it was noticeable, and I particularly paid attention to that in those Memphis games. And they're just even his stance, he's not ready to play defense. He's standing upright. There's no kind of
he's looking like Nikola Jokic out there, bro.
Yeah, he's not putting in that effort on the defensive end of the floor. And you mentioned again last episode about not having a coach holding him accountable, and I kind of countered with Anthony needs to hold himself accountable. But in this situation, I would have agreed with you that I thought Chauncey had an opportunity to send a message that the defense was just not acceptable and he needed to go to the bench, and that didn't happen. So he's clearly being told how he's playing is acceptable.
It's fine.
And it's fine. And
there's teachable moments that Chauncey Billups just does not take advantage of. Like, and this could, like, this isn't like an attack on an ego. This is just like a teachable moment for Ant, for the future of Ant, not even thinking about the Blazers in general, but the future of Anthony Simons and his career. There were teachable moments that you see in the last three games that Chauncey Billups just like, maybe he's telling him in behind closed doors, but I seriously doubt that is the case. But there's like moments where Chauncey Billups is like a potential Hall of Fame point guard. He sees shit that you and I don't see. He sees shit that Anthony Simons doesn't see. But I don't think that he's using his knowledge of the game to help him achieve better. He's just chill. I mean, maybe he just knows that he's going to get fired in the offseason and is chilling until then, but I don't feel like Ant isn't a very... The only change that he has from last few years is the fact that he's driving more. And I appreciate the fact that he's driving more. But he really hasn't changed the way that he processes the game in, you know, the learning development time. So it's tough. I hope that Chauncey's gone and we get to see a new buy-in from Ant, because I don't think he's bought in at all right now.
No, he has not. But before we talk about the upcoming games, leave on a bright spot. I thought Timani Kamara played really well in both Memphis games. Post All-Star break, he's bumped his rebounding up to nearly 7 a night to go along with 8.5 points, shooting 50% from three, attacking closeouts a little bit more respectively. Just overall playing with a lot of hustle, a lot of heart that you want to see. If you're tuning into these games, I don't know what his ceiling is going to be, but defensively, you know, he forced that turnover on GG Jackson late in the fourth Saturday in Memphis that gave the Blazers the ball back down four with a chance to win the game, which they ended up doing. I think he's just the type of player that, you know, as we discuss, and you'll hear in our mock draft episode, the Blazers are at a point where they have so many players in so many certain situations, young guys needing chances to play, mm-hmm. trying to carve out a role on this roster moving forward, being a long-term piece, 6 to 7 rookies that they've either drafted or traded for over the past 2 years have either played rotational minutes or are currently playing rotational minutes for them. That's when you factor in the additional 4 picks in the upcoming draft in 2024, somebody's going to get squeezed out. Timani Kamara is a player that I'm confident is not going to get squeezed out. Whether you think he's going to be like a star or just a role player, I think his effort and what he has a lot of Jabari Walker in him, in the sense that they both play just with a relentlessness. It doesn't matter. Like, it feels like if you played like checkers against him, ping pong, like he's just gonna want to win everything. I just get a lot of Wesley Matthews when I watch him, and just in terms of he just does not give up and does not want to lose. I mean, there's a reason. I think last game was the first game he's missed all year, and that was due to an illness. Like, he's been the most consistent Blazer all year.
Well, here's the thing about Timani and his draft position. In theory, the Blazers should think the least about him because he was a second-round pick, and they can cut him, and it's not going to hurt him at them as a franchise. Like, his contract is extremely cuttable. Like, he should be the one that's getting squeezed out. But that's not going to happen because the effort that he plays with and the fact that he can fit around players. So shout out to him for being better than his draft quality. Now, if he was in this role the entire year, I would feel so much better about him. But he was just put in a position where he wasn't able to succeed playing starters minutes in a role that just isn't made for him. He should be the eighth man on a team, not the fourth. So he's now in a position where he can show his skills. So I think that his run post All-Star break is really important, because it would be very easy, because of his draft, where he was drafted, and Ryan Rupaire, to cut both of them, because it's going to hurt us more to cut Chris Murray financially than it would to cut either of the 2 second rounders. So the fact that they're playing and have, you know, potential, and even Jabari Walker too, he was a second round pick. He was one of the last picks. The Blazers value those guys less. So the fact that they are producing in these minutes is huge for their future, not only on this team, but in every team. So shout out to all of our second round picks that are putting in the effort and showing why they need more minutes. So, I mean, all of the guys are doing, all of our second rounders are showing something.
All right, Sage, let's quickly take a look at the week upcoming. The Blazers kick off a 6-game homestand in just 9 days. So they are packing in the games. There are 2 sets of back-to-backs at home, which you rarely see. It starts off, we will discuss the first 4. Oklahoma City tonight, Houston Friday, a back-to-back against the Raptors on Saturday, Monday against the NBA leading Boston Celtics, and then Wednesday, the first of a back-to-back against the Atlanta Hawks. Again, we will talk about the first 4. I said the Blazers would split in Memphis. You said they would lose both. So another W for me, +2 on the season. Quickly, let's do OKC, a team that has beat the Blazers by, what, 38 and 62 points so far this year. DA, doubtful. Grant, Thibault, Kamara, questionable. Scoot still out. Brogdon still out. Oklahoma City has lost two in a row. Phoenix and the Lakers both kind of took their lunch. And I think they're going to come into Portland with bad intentions.
I think the get-right game right here for the
I think this is a get-right game for Oklahoma City. The only I think they're going to break down the door on the Blazers. This is also the first game home after a road trip, especially for a young team, could be very sluggish. I hope it doesn't get ugly, but I do think it's going to get ugly. If DA doesn't play, no one is stopping Shai Gilgeous from getting into the lane.
Wap Reef is giving up 70 to Shai Gilgeous. If DA isn't there, they're just going to waltz into the paint and score. Yeah. J-Dub, Shai, Josh Giddey, all of them are like, we have no rim protector if DA is hurt.
Friday against the Rockets.
We both say we lost, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
No Tari Eason for the Rockets. He is has a lower leg injury. I think something kind of scary, if I'm not mistaken, but it did turn out to just be all right. I think he's going to be okay, but he is out for the season. I saw that notification come through, but Şengün has just been balling. This is also a team that does not own their first round draft pick. It goes to the Oklahoma City Thunder via the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook trade. So they have no reason to tank. They're probably not going to make the play-in, but Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet still playing. They are very hyper-talented team. Excited to watch this one. Excited to see Cam Whitmore, Amen Thompson, obviously Jabari Smith. This team is nice, and they've got vets, and it's nice to see a team that's actually still playing hard, and maybe if more teams didn't have their picks, they would be doing that. But they've been much improved under Ime
Udoka. The buy-in by them has just been spectacular. Yeah,
they were a shit show to be frank last year. And now they look like, an adult basketball team. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, it's a win. I'm going to assume that DA is at least, and Jeremy Grant are back for this one, but I'm going to be watching that Şengün Ayton matchup. Şengün is not quite on the tier of Jokic and Embiid or even Adebayo, but I think he has a case for being a top five center in the league.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he has so much usage and creates so much for his team is remarkable. If DA is engaged, I think that he could be a factor, but the Rockets just have a buy-in that we just do not. So, honestly, regardless of who is available for the Blazers, I think we lose.
Yeah, I think Houston wins as well. And then you get the Toronto Raptors, a team that got the absolute floor wiped with them by the Pelicans at home. I think it was a 40-plus point victory for the New Orleans Pelicans. Scotty Barnes,
out for the year.
All intents and purposes, is out for the year with a fractured hand. Another team that probably will be tanking very soon. They owe a top six protected pick to the Spurs, so they really want to move up in those lottery standings. They still are a team much different from the early season matchup in Toronto. No Siakam, no Anunoby in our Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett. Former Blazer Gary Trent is still getting run. This is a game I think the Blazers actually win. I know they've had their problems beating bad teams. Clearly, Detroit, Washington, San Antonio, Utah, Charlotte have all waltzed into Portland and ended victorious. Portland has a hard time getting up for teams that are either as bad or on the same level as them. But I think at a certain point, they're going to have to get a victory over one of these teams. I know it's on the second night of a back-to-back, but the Raptors are going to be shutting it down, and they're going to be shutting it down fairly quickly.
Yeah.
No pun intended to Emmanuel, but without Scotty Barnes, he gives them so much length. He gives them so many matchup problems with Portland in the past. Portland's problem is scoring the basketball. But as we saw, when you play a team just as poorly at scoring the basketball as in Memphis, that was the 29th, the 30th ranked offenses. We had the pleasure of watching last week. Toronto without Barnes is going to really struggle to score the ball. I know Poeltl's been a thorn in our side from his San Antonio days, but I just have a feeling the Blazers are going to get right this one. And you're not going to lose all six games on a homestand. I know they lost 7 of 7 last homestand, but mathematically they're going to win. And I pick the Raptors game for them to get that win.
Well, I have to pick the Raptors winning for our game. Like,
or you could just actually pick who you think is going to win the game. Like,
well, honestly, you even convinced me that the Raptors feasibly could win. If Emmanuel Quickley is there, I think the Raptors win. I don't know how we defend Quickley and RJ if they play.
Like, they have been playing. They've just been really bad without Scottie Barnes.
Yeah. I honestly think that Emmanuel Quickley is going to get paid Anfernee Simons money, potentially more. So if Ant isn't on his A game, I think the Raptors win. And obviously this helps for, you know, our projection game, but I think that the Raptors win because they still have some players that will give us problems. Who on our team can stop Emmanuel or RJ? That's going to be kind of tough. So I think the Toronto Raptors win.
Last game, the Boston Celtics.
On paper, what if we beat the Celtics?
Should be a stomping.
Yeah.
But this is on NBA TV, so a pseudo nationally televised game. We've seen the Blazers get up for the Philadelphia 76ers, the Milwaukee Bucks. They played a really strong game against the Miami Heat. I don't think they're going to. I think this is a similar game to the Minnesota game that we just watched on Monday, where you got a team that's probably going to take the Blazers lightly, and the Blazers are probably going to keep it close for three quarters. But then Boston's going to flip that switch. They're probably pretty grumpy after blowing that game against the Cavaliers without Donovan Mitchell, even in uniform. But you also have to take into account the Celtics have played so well this year that there's really no way that any team is going to catch them for the best overall record in the league. So Boston may try to rest a player or two, and it could bite them. I'm picking Boston to win, but it would not surprise me if this is the victory that the Blazers end up getting, just from the patterns that I've watched the Blazers play this year against great teams and how great teams have played against Portland.
I think one of the things, you can't use Minnesota as an example of us playing hard or playing well, because the difference between Kristaps and Rudy Gobert, like, if Dwab Reef had such a huge impact in the game, it's because Rudy Gobert can't laterally move. Kristaps Porzingis, I think, will be just fine defending Dwab Reef on those pop plays if he plays. Boston wins, and I think it kind of gets ugly. So, yeah, I think it's a 4-0 week, and you think it's a 0-4 week, and you think it's a 1-3 week. Excuse me. So, yeah, do you have anything else, or are we wrapping this bad boy up?
Get better soon, Scoot. I need to watch some Scoot for this team to move. I mean, we got 22 more games. I need a little bit more.
Doug, like, full transparency, I'm on draft mode. Like I'm watching way more college basketball than I am NBA basketball. Like, I'm not even doing DFS. I'm just doing a few prop bets here and there. Boom. I'm not even, like, you know, March is when NBA gets wacky. Teams are realizing that it's better to tank or rest their starters if they're the Boston Celtics and no one's catching them. So basketball is going to get worse and worse every week that we talk about it. So I'm on my college basketball shit. Like, I watch way more college sports than I do NBA right now. I mean, like, this is when teams ramp up in college basketball. Like, they're trying to make a tournament appearance. That, like, this is important. This is important. So yeah, I've been on my college basketball shit. This NBA, like, it's only going to get worse until the playoffs. So thank you to everybody who's listening. Thank you to everybody who has given the draft content a chance. We will be back next week to talk about the Portland Trailblazers and do draft stuff. Thank you to everybody. It's 1 p.m. It's lunchtime for your boy. Talk to y'all later. Peace.
Wherever you may be, this is Bill Shinley. Good night, everybody.
Let's go! Come on, everybody, and listen.